So tonight, Psalm 23 is our focus. Have it open in front of you if you can, 458 in the church Bibles. And what we're dealing with tonight is something very special, isn't it? Psalm 23, arguably, I think clearly probably the most well-known passage in the whole Bible, even still overtaking John 3:16, you could say. It's somehow made its way into homes, funeral upon funeral, football stadiums. I learned that West Bromwich Albion sing this during the game. I need to still understand why they do that. There's pictures across the stadium of the Lord is my shepherd. Somehow it's become a West Brom song. Look into that later if you want to find out why. It's even become known as a secular icon. So in a society that doesn't want God, it still loves Psalm 23. Very interesting. So there's something very special about this psalm, obviously. It does something to us. But there's a danger, obviously, with all of that. Because it becomes so familiar, I'm sure all of you would even be able to recite it. Maybe it's one of the few passages of scripture that you could recite. Even those of you who are not familiar with the Bible at all, I'm sure you have heard of this and know it quite well. There's dangers there, isn't there? Because the more familiar something becomes, the more likely I am to switch off when I hear it. The more likely I am to say, I know this, I've heard all there is to say about this. And it's no wonder then that preachers often avoid it. So Brad, hope he doesn't mind me saying this. It's nothing bad against Brad, but he spoke on this at our youth club and he did a quick search on APC and was surprised to have find how little this has been covered in preaching at APC. Not that it hasn't, but it's less than he thought for a psalm that is so popular. And it makes sense. I mean, even as I approach this tonight, I'm afraid I'm going to muddy the green pastures that have been such a blessing to so many people, and I'm just going to trample on it as I try and explain what it's all about. So there is a danger with such a popular, familiar psalm, and it means ultimately that we can miss what it's really all about. So that's what I hope to do tonight, is somehow hit afresh what's really going on in this psalm and why it matters for all of us here. So there's two questions we're basically going to deal with. Hopefully keep it very simple. The first thing is, what is Psalm 23 all about? So we're going to start big view. What's going on in this psalm? What's the big point? What's the big message? And at first, it might seem very hard to answer because as you go through, there's so much going on, isn't there? So many pictures. There's green pastures, there's still waters, there's sheep, there's a shepherd, there's valleys and darkness and enemies and all sorts going on, banquets. So what's the main point in all of this? What's the big theme? So let's try and piece it together. Stand back and try and take a look at the psalm as a whole. Did you see as we read it, or even now as your eyes glance over it, did you notice how often the personal pronoun is used? My. The Lord's my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me lie down. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. I can go through the whole psalm like that. There's no us or our or we, as in other psalms. This is very individual. This is very personal. This is about someone. David. Psalm of David. So what we're getting here is a very personal window into David, one of the most significant men in the whole of the Bible. The king, a very significant man. So you're getting a window into David. So that's the first thing. Okay, it's about David. But then you keep looking and you see there's someone else here. The Lord, verse 1. He makes me. He leads me. He restores my. He leads me. And you're seeing this back and forth constantly. The Lord, David. Think about who this Lord is for a minute, who the Lord is. We're talking about the creator of the universe, the one who's made every single one of us by speaking everything into existence. The reason you exist tonight is because of him. He's everywhere. He's all powerful. He's holy. He's separate from all of us. And yet, as you read this psalm, you're hearing a man called David speak on very personal terms with this Lord. That's interesting. It seems to be all about this very close personal relationship between a man called David and the God of the universe. So that's what's going on here. But you keep looking more and you see more about this. Did you notice how much of this is about what David does? Not much at all. The one active verb I can find really about David is walk. I walk. That's all he does. Just walks. What's the rest of the psalm about? He makes me lie down. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. The Lord is doing everything. He's doing everything. It's all about the Lord and what the Lord does. It's not so much about David, actually. It's actually all about the Lord and what the Lord is doing. And to highlight that, we just need to look at the first verse again. The Lord is my shepherd. I think that emphasizes the point. Think about shepherd and sheep for a minute. Think about what David is saying there. David is saying in that phrase, I'm a sheep. I'm a sheep. Now, I'm going to try and get this across to you because you think, okay, that's nice. Sheep are fluffy, nice animals. It's actually not flattering at all for David. Now, I don't know if you've ever been asked. Maybe you've sat in those awkward icebreakers at work and no one really wants to be there and you have to take part in this weird icebreaker. And one of them they love is, if you were an animal, what would you be? Now, some would say, I'm an eagle. I'm soar through life. I'm the top bird. Or a dolphin, my intelligence. There's all these reasons we'll go for different animals. I guarantee you not one person would say, I think I'm a bit of a sheep, actually. I'm a sheep. When you look at sheep and how they live and what they do, it's actually quite embarrassing for David to say, I'm like a sheep. Sheep are vulnerable. They've got no predatory instinct. They can't defend themselves. They get lost easy. They've got no way of finding their way back to where they were. In fact, I've heard that if they fall on their backs, they just have to lie there. They can't actually turn back on their front again. They're one of the few, think about this, they're one of the few animals that actually need outside intervention in their life. There's a role called a shepherd. Not many animals have that. And other animals are fine in the wild, but sheep seem to need this outside help. Do you see what David is saying about himself here? He says, yep, that's me. I'm a sheep. And then he says, God's like a shepherd. So that's even more shocking, you could say, because he's saying God has taken a personal care and interest in me. That's what shepherds do for their sheep. They give all their time to the sheep. That's their full-time occupation. They sleep where the sheep are. They do everything. So do you see what he's saying about the Lord when he says the Lord's my shepherd? This great God of the universe cares about little old me, the sheep that gets lost, the sheep that does all these silly things. So do you see, it's quite a striking statement, isn't it? And then he goes further still because he says, I shall not want. Now that can be confusing when I used to hear that, or when people hear that, you probably think, the Lord's my shepherd, I shall not want. Does he not want the shepherd? Or what does that mean? The translation maybe isn't the best. It's basically saying in shorthand, God gives me everything I ever need. Not everything I want, thankfully, because sheep are silly and they think they want this and they should have had that, but everything I need. So that's the point here. So are you getting the kind of headline, the main point? In this psalm, if I could summarize what this psalm is all about, it's David saying, God is mine. I know him personally, but he's my everything. I need him. I can't live without him. Without him, I'm in trouble. That's basically the headline of this psalm. But I can take it a step further still, because 1,000 years later, or so, Jesus comes into the world, doesn't he? And what does he say? I am the good shepherd. So this psalm is about him. I'm the Lord, he says. I'm the shepherd. So then that takes on a whole new meaning. Because this psalm is saying, you can know Jesus very personally. You need to know him very personally. Because if you don't, you're like a sheep without a shepherd. It's a very striking message that this psalm is actually getting across. It's indirectly because David is saying it about himself. But I think as we listen to it, as you sit and read it, as you take it upon your lips and sing it, which is what they would have done, surely it's asking us the question, is he yours? Is this Jesus your shepherd? I think it starts to get quite uncomfortable as you realize this about the psalm. Because people would have sung this and surely they're thinking, my shepherd, he leads me. Wait a minute, does he? Is he my shepherd? And I think that's where it gets uncomfortable, because this is my remember. This is I, not we, not us, not APC, not your family and your parents, but you. You. Not cultural Christianity. We need our country back. not religion in the sense of I go into this building and do stuff, but you and him. Where do you stand with him? It's very uncomfortable. And as I was thinking about that, I was thinking, I wonder if West Bromwich Albion realise that as they sing about it in their football stadiums. I wonder if the funeral parlours and the people who sing it realise that this is what the psalm is doing. It's sometimes like maybe a nice little bedtime story, isn't it? Sheep and green pasture. No, it's saying, do you know the Lord Jesus? Is he your shepherd? Okay, well, that leads to another question. Why is that the theme of the psalm? Why is this the headline? Why is this the main focus? What's the big deal about knowing Jesus as our shepherd? Why is it so important? Well, that's what David answers in the rest of the psalm. So we've kind of looked at verse 1 a little bit and a bird's eye view, but now we just need to kind of walk through the rest of the psalm and you'll find the answer to that question. David answers it here. Why is it so vital that you know Jesus as your personal shepherd tonight? Why? And actually, as I was thinking about how to do this, I was like, how can I split this up? Because as preachers, you like to kind of have your first point and your second point, and maybe you make it rhyme or you put two C's and you have alliteration. I was trying all of that. And I was like, Joe, stop. You're going to take away the psalm if you do that. Because I was thinking about it. How does David tell us how good the Lord is? How does he tell you how important it is to have Jesus as your shepherd? He chooses to use pictures, metaphors through the whole psalm. It's like you're being pulled in, because that's what pictures are doing, isn't it? It's like he says to you, I want you to walk with me through this psalm and you'll see how good this shepherd is. So that's what's going on in the rest of this psalm. He's taken you by the hand and says, come with me and you'll see what it's like to have the Lord as your shepherd. So that's all we're going to do for most of the rest of the time, is just to walk through this psalm, and hopefully you'll see by the end. You should leave this place. I hope if this is done right and something of the psalm comes across, you should leave this place tonight saying, how could I not have him as my shepherd? I can't take another step in my life without this shepherd. That's what this night should do if this psalm does really get across in the Lord's power. So, let's go through it. So we've seen the big picture. We've seen a shepherd and a sheep, right? We've explained all of that. David and the Lord. Now we get to verse 2 and we're in this scene. What does he say? He makes me lie down in green pastures. So we're in this beautiful countryside. You have to imagine this, because obviously we're in grey London. But just imagine you're in the beauty of Scotland. I won't say Wales, but Scotland particularly. And there's green grass, sun shining, and you see this sheep, and what's it doing? It's lying down in green pastures. Now, why is that significant? Because, again, we miss this being Londoners. I'm known for not being very up to date with all of this stuff. I don't know much about all of this, but I've been in Scotland a bit more than normal, as some of you might know. So I've had a chance to observe sheep in their natural habitat, because there's loads of sheep up there. We're just driving to places and there's sheep everywhere. So this psalm has made me actually look out at them and try and, normally I'm just on my phone or chatting away. I'm like, let's look at these sheep for a minute. And every time I looked, I didn't see any of them lying down. Rarely did I see any. They're always doing the same thing. They're standing there, eating, going again, eating. They're just all they do all day. If I was going to say a percentage of how many I saw lying down, 1%. But when I did see that one lying down, it stood out because it said to me, I started to understand maybe what David was talking here. Because as I saw that sheep lying down, I thought, that sheep is finally full. It's finally satisfied. It's finally content. It's had enough. And it just lies down. It's resting. It's safe. Nothing to worry about. Not concerned about where's the next pasture I need to go to. Just lying down. David says, that's me with the Lord. That's me. Then he continues more. The second part of verse 2. He leads me beside still waters. So now you're seeing the shepherd come up to the sheep and say, right, come on now. Up you go. You've laid down enough. Come over here now. You need some water. And it's still water, not running water, because apparently sheep need to drink from still water. And it's refreshing. The water's now refreshing the sheep. It needed that water. It was going to die. So you see what's happening here. David is saying here in verse 2, do you get this? With the Lord, he's saying, with him as my shepherd, my emptiness is gone. My searching is over. My soul is finally at rest. I'm finally refreshed. I'm finally satisfied. What a picture for us tonight, isn't it? Aren't we like sheep when you think about it? Never lying down, always on the move, always eating here, going over here, never at rest, never actually resting. I'm always worrying, constantly seeking, never satisfied, never able to just lie down. Even when I physically lie down, my soul isn't lying down. My soul's still, I need this, I need to do this, what about this? David says, this is what the shepherd does. That's why the shepherd is so good. I hope you're drawn in so far with the first bit. But then he continues, because we need to, I'm keeping an eye on the time here. He restores my soul. So he continues now, and he gives you another angle to the picture. Because now with that bit, what does restore mean? It means he brings back. So what we're seeing here is this sheep wasn't always lying down. The sheep actually had to be carried over here. It had to be picked up and brought there. Because what was the sheep doing? The sheep was silly and rebellious and went away from the shepherd, thinking that the grass was greener over there. And the shepherd had to come and restore him and bring him back to where he was. That's the picture here. David is saying basically here, I'm a sinner. I'm a sinner. I keep going off from the shepherd. I keep doing things that I know are wrong, thinking it's going to work this time, and it still didn't. I keep looking outside thinking, no, the shepherd's not enough. I'm going to go over here now. And then I have to get picked up again. We see it in David's life, don't we? Bathsheba is the obvious incident where he commits adultery. He knows it's wrong, but he commits adultery, and then he gets her husband killed. Murder and adultery. He went far. He went far as a sheep. But he restored my soul, he says. He restores, present tense. He brings me back. What's that saying? He forgives me. He brings me back to goodness again, even though I deserve all the rubbish that I went for, even though I deserve destruction and cast away from the shepherd forever. Now, surely that gives us insight into why the sheep can lie down. I don't think it was just because he had a good feed. I think in this picture, he's lying down because he's restored, forgiven. Isn't the biggest reason we don't have rest in our souls is because of guilt and shame? That weight that you carry around, that thing you did that you wish you didn't do, and no one knows, that nagging conscience that keeps telling you it's wrong and keeps bringing back to you the things that you did before, that's why we don't lie down. But here, there's rest. The sheep can lie down because God has restored David. His sin has been taken away. The guilt is gone. He's forgiven. Do you know that's something you first find when you become a Christian? I remember when I first realized that Jesus died for all of my sins. What rest and joy I had. Sadly, it doesn't always stay like that. But that's something you find when you first become a Christian. But I think the point here is something you keep finding, because we're prone to wonder, as we sung. So you might keep going off, but yet he keeps restoring you again and again. What a shepherd. What a shepherd to have. Okay, but there's more. He continues. He leads me in paths of righteousness. That's important. It's basically saying God doesn't just forgive, but he leads you on the right path so you don't continue to do the things you did before. God wants righteousness for you. He doesn't want to forgive you just for you to go back to the same path again and again and do the cycle. God's purpose as a shepherd is, no, I want you on the right path, the good path, the path you should be on. So that's important, isn't it? The shepherd really does care for us. He wants the best for us. But note this, he says, for his name's sake. That's interesting, isn't it? What's the reason the shepherd does it? His name. What does that say? The shepherd loves you so much, if you're his sheep, that he's tied his own reputation in your well-being. If he fails you and lets you go off and doesn't bring you back and put you on the right path, his own name will be failed. He would have failed in his own reputation. He's so bound up with you that he says, my name is in them. If I fail, my own reputation's at stake. How secure is that sheep who knows that? So I'm trying to give you a picture of how good the shepherd is just by this first part. What a scene we have. But maybe to you at this moment, it sounds more like a fairy tale because I'm describing to you something of the Christian life. Maybe you're sitting there outside of this psalm and you're thinking, nah, sounds too good to be true. Life's not like that. Or maybe you're sitting there as a Christian and you're thinking, that's not how it is. That's not my Christian life. Green pastures, lying down. Well, that's why there's more to the psalm. And the next bit's so key because there's a second scene. Do you notice in verse 4 how abruptly and dramatically it changes? We go from green pastures and sunshine and still waters to verse 4. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. That can be translated deep darkness. So there's no more lying in the sunshine suddenly. It's suddenly nighttime. And it's not a normal night because it's deep darkness. There's something sinister about this darkness. And it's pitch black. And you can't see the shepherd anymore. Now, that alone is scary because I've experienced pitch black darkness, which I don't think many of you maybe have in London streetlights. But again, this is in Scotland when I was younger. There was a moment in the middle of the night where not one light was anywhere because I was in the countryside. And I woke up and it really was pitch black. And I screamed, literally screamed at the top of my lungs like a little child, even though it was 2 years ago. No, I'm joking. It was a long time ago, but the point is darkness itself is scary. But then you're remembering this is a sheep. Sheep are vulnerable. There's enemies around. It can't see the enemies. It can't defend itself. It can't see the shepherd anymore. It's a terrible scene. It's a hopeless scene. What does this picture then? Well, I love the fact that this is open-ended, this valley. Many people could say it's many different things. Yes, there's the shadow of death mentioned, but it could be darkness, simply darkness. This can picture cancer, loneliness, heartbreak, disease, depression, even death itself, because it's the shadow of death, isn't it? Death is in view. You're supposed to think as you hear this of the darkest valley you could ever imagine for yourself, the thing that you're most afraid of. Picture that as you view this sheep. Now, this bit's important of the psalm. Because don't we all face something of this? If there's one thing we all share in common, it is that we all will go through something very dark. And maybe someone here tonight is going through the deepest darkness they've ever known. But isn't it true that 10 out of 10 people die? Isn't it true that every single one of us here will have to pass through that valley of death at some point? Isn't this something we all have to face? Isn't this vital? And this psalm is real. Is saying this is reality. It's not all green pastures, even for Christians, especially Christians, actually. I've known some of my darkest moments since being a Christian. It's interesting. But keep looking. What's the first two words that hang over this scene? Verse 4. Even though. Those are powerful words. Words of hope. David is looking and saying, things may hit. I may enter the deepest darkness I've ever known. I might go through my worst nightmare, yet even though that happens, even if I will fear no evil. What confidence. He's saying ultimately, whatever happens, I'm still safe. I'm still safe, even in death. No evil still. Why? One answer, do you see it there? For you, verse 4, for you are with me. The shepherd is still with him. He might not be able to see the shepherd in the darkness, but the shepherd's still there. But more, did you notice this? This is the first time in the psalm where David stops from talking about God as he, third person, and suddenly it turns to you. It's almost as though David looks up in the middle of this psalm and starts talking to the shepherd. He stops talking to us now. I've been telling you about he, but now you're with me. Wow. This is my favorite part of the psalm, by the way, because it tells me that what I need to do in darkness is talk to him. That's the first thing. But it also tells me that God has moved from leading up ahead in scene one, in the green pastures he was leading. Now God has come right next to the sheep. The shepherd is right next to David, and he can just talk directly to him. What's the lesson here? The darker the scene, the closer the shepherd. And there's countless examples of this in the Christian life. I know Christians sitting right here in this church that have gone through their darkest times. Disease has hit, cancer has hit, and they testify the same thing all the time. God came closer. God came closer. I've got my favorite example, which I won't say because I've used it about 100 times, but I'm tempted to say it, but I won't. But there's missionaries that have gone through this. I think you know who I'm talking about. There's times where you would look at someone, a Christian, and say they are in utter darkness, and yet they're at peace. How? This is the answer. For you are with me. Okay, but there's something that particularly comforts David here. Did you notice that? He carries on. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. So he's looking at the shepherd's hand. He's looking at what the shepherd does. Rod, what's that talking about? It's basically a tool to beat enemies. So shepherds need that, obviously, because there's beasts around and all sorts. So David is saying, the fact that you are ready to destroy my enemies, I'm comforted by that. Now, we need to hear that, don't we? Because there's enemies all around us. Death is pictured as an enemy. Sin is pictured as an enemy. So that rod is comforting. That God has the power to crush even death. Find out later how. But then there's the staff. So it's not just the rod. The staff, it could be on the same instrument, or it could be two instruments in his hand, one end, the other end. But anyway, the staff is leading and correcting. So David is saying, the fact that you have a staff in your hand, it tells me that even if I was to take a wrong foot in the darkness, even if I was to panic, even if I was to turn back and say this is too hard, your staff will just go like that. And you'll correct me and you'll guide me back on course. That's his comfort. That's his comfort. Are you seeing the logic in this, why he fears no evil? If the God of the universe is actually next to him and protecting and leading him, as he says, why should he fear? If that's true, it's a logical statement. I'm not saying he didn't shudder. I'm not saying he didn't have a bit of a wobble. But he didn't. He knew he was safe deep down underneath it all. So shouldn't we pause again at this point? Do you see why this psalm grabs people? Do you see why it's so popular? Isn't this what we long for in our world of darkness and scary things? In our world of loneliness? In our world of fair weather friends that only stay with you while it's green pastures, but the minute the valley comes, they're gone? But the shepherd's still there. Isn't this what we long for in a world terrified of death, that final valley, and they're doing anything to ignore it? And David says, oh, even though it comes, he can face it. He can think about it. Even though this is what the world is longing for. This shepherd, it all comes with him. That's why this is so important, why we're talking about Jesus as the shepherd. This is all because of him. Okay, but let's continue. Because now the scene changes again. Note this. He went through the valley. The dark valley wasn't the end of the journey. He's gone through it. Verse 5, you prepare a table before me. What a picture. What a shift again. He's suddenly in a warm house. There's a banquet. I picture medium rare steaks, triple cooked chips, drinks. Now, dare I say wine? Dare I say schlur? For those who wouldn't dare touch that. In fact, the host in this scene is going to every length, we get the sense. And what's happening? In the presence of my enemies, verse 5. So the enemies are like peering through the window. And they can't do anything to stop it. It's a very interesting scene, isn't it? And David just walks into the scene and the host runs over. And what happens? You anoint my head with oil. So he just gets oil poured on his head. Now, if I did that to you, if you came around to my flat, you'd be concerned if I just poured oil over your head. But in that time, that was a huge thing. That was talking of honor. That was talking of welcome. That it might be, if you want to parallel it to today, which doesn't really do the justice, but it might be you coming into my house and saying, let me get you some slippers. Oh, take your coat off. Here's a warm fleece. And it says something, doesn't it? It's saying, I'm welcoming you in. I care for you. You're honored in my house. I want you to feel at home. And there's something of that here in this anointing with oil. But then he carries on. My cup overflows. Picture the host. Every time David drinks a bit, the host is running over and topping him up. Again, is it water? Wine? The picture here is of this scene of celebration, joy, communion with God, the love of God. Do you see how it's moved? We've gone from rest in green pastures. That was great. Oh, to rest and to lay down. Then comfort in darkness. That was great. But to be in God's house, banqueting, knowing his joy, knowing his love, overwhelmingly, it's all overflowing. There's oil pouring down. There's my cups overflowing. It's all abundant and it's overwhelming. I'm just feeling this overwhelming love of God in his presence, and he's so happy to see me. Let's have a feast. That's the picture here. But David's still not done, because it's like he looks over to us in the middle of the banquet, verse 6, and he says this. Listen to this. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. That's a huge statement. Can I try and explain that very quickly due to time? Goodness shall follow me. Good things that benefit you, that for your welfare. That's what he's talking about there. What's mercy? Kindness. Undeserved kindness. I didn't deserve it. I keep going off. I keep being stupid. But goodness and mercy follow me. Now, follow me doesn't quite capture it. In the original, it's more pursuing. Think of a policeman chasing a criminal. That would be the idea. But flip it the other way around. It's not to catch them and punish them. It's to bless them. You're chasing someone to bless them. That's the picture here. And David is saying, that's what's happening all the days of my life. When I ran off and did that sin, his goodness and mercy still pursued me. When I entered the valley, his goodness and mercy was still chasing me all the days of my life. No matter what happened, when cancer hit, when I felt completely alone, when I was heartbroken and betrayed, his goodness and mercy still pursued me on that day. What a claim. But then he hasn't finished yet, because the second half, this is the closing climax of the psalm. And I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. That's the end. And the end is no end at all, because it's forever. That's where the shepherd is leading all along. That's the goal of the shepherd. That's the goal of Christianity. If Christianity was just about a better life now, follow any shepherd. But this is eternity in view. Do you see the end here? Do you see how certain David says it? I shall dwell in the house. Not maybe, not if I do enough, not any of that. I shall. He's so certain of heaven. He's so certain of forever. Are you seeing how shocking and wonderful Psalm 23 is? Now, I've probably done a terrible job considering the greatness of this psalm, but I hope something of it came across, how different this is to the world in which we live. In fact, I'd say the world is in the absolute opposite in every area. If we had time to go through that, it would be great. But you see, I think as you're looking on at this psalm, if I've done any good job here, the question that should be burning within you is, how did David find this? How is this possible? How does he get such goodness? This is the Lord. How does he find this? And actually, the answer's in the beginning and the end. Did you notice the only time the name the Lord is used, that capital L-O-R-D, that's God's name in the Bible, personal name. It's only the beginning and the end. Do you know what that's telling you? Everything in this psalm is bookended by the Lord. Everything I've just described to you is only possible because of him. That's the message of this psalm. It's all because of the Lord. And yes, you might should still be saying, yes, but how? Because the Lord is holy and just and hates evil. And this sheep keeps doing evil. Where's the justice? This is David, the man who slept with Bathsheba. How can he say this with such certainty? He's certain here in everything that he's saying. Well, remember Jesus filled in the detail and said, I am the good shepherd. What does he say immediately after that? It's almost like he can't wait to say it in the context of a shepherd. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays his life down for the sheep. That's the answer. That's how this psalm is possible. That's a direct reference to the cross, what Jesus says there. Jesus, the shepherd, becomes the lamb and gives his life as a sacrifice in the place of silly, sinful sheep like David and me and you. That's the answer. That's how this psalm is possible. Do you know, I could take it as far to say that Jesus faced an inverted version of this psalm so we can enjoy the reality of this psalm. He faced the opposite in every sense on the cross. Was there green pastures? Was there still waters? No. He said, I thirst. Was God with him in the valley of the shadow of death when he died on the cross? Well, he said, my God, why have you forsaken me? He faced everything that we deserve as the stubborn sheep that we are, so that we can enter in to Psalm 23. And by the way, he rose from the dead. And even now, he's preparing a place for us in this house of the Lord. And one day he will come and fetch us until we can be with him forever. That's the key to Psalm 23. It's all because of the shepherd. So do you get why the main point is driving home? You need this shepherd. It's because of him. That's what all this depends on. And surely as we close, which you might be glad to hear, we're coming to a close now. That question I said earlier, is he my shepherd? Surely that's come even louder now. It should do. Is he my shepherd? You, not my parents, not my friends, not this church's shepherd, your shepherd, you. Forget everyone else for a minute. If you're saying yes to that, to this tonight, if you say, yes, I know he's mine, then this psalm is your reality. Take comfort tonight. No matter how dark your valley is and will get, he will never leave you. He never will. Even when you're stupid the 100th time and you do that same sin again, he will restore you. He will. It says it. The end, where's the end? I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. That's your end. It's guaranteed. Don't doubt it. This psalm says that. But maybe you sit there and you say, I just don't feel that. This is opposite to my experience right now. I'm not lying down. I'm empty. I keep going on wrong paths. I don't feel I'm getting restored. And maybe some of you are sitting there tonight saying, this is the darkest time I've ever been in, and I don't feel the shepherd is with me. Well, very quickly, was David always in green pastures in this psalm? No. Verse 4. Was he always on the path of righteousness? No. Verse 3, he needed restoring. Did he always feel God with him in the darkness? If you just read this psalm, you might have said yes. But if you read the psalm before, Psalm of David, what's the first thing he says? My God, why have you forsaken me? He felt alone. The point I'm making is this. There are many things that change in this psalm. There is one constant. It's the Lord is my shepherd. That's the one thing that didn't change. And that's our hope tonight. If you can say tonight, the Lord is my shepherd, that's everything. Doesn't matter what you're feeling. Doesn't matter what you're currently going through. If you can say verse one on a personal basis, then all is well and all will be well. Trust the shepherd. But if your answer tonight is no, I cannot get past verse one in this psalm. I cannot say he's my shepherd. Then absolutely none of this psalm is your reality. I have to be blunt. You're actually in the opposite. None of this psalm is your reality. You've got no certainty when you die. In fact, the only certainty is hell. You're alone in every darkness. You will face death alone because no one can walk with you through that valley. It's a horrible state to be in. You're going to keep trying to find green pastures and you'll never find it. If you cannot say the Lord is my shepherd, oh, what are you doing? Does that concern you tonight? If you can't say yes to that, surely it concerns you. Aren't you tired of the roaming around and never lying down? Aren't you tired of facing darkness alone and trying to make sense of it yourself? Aren't you afraid of the thought of death and beyond with no shepherd? If you are concerned tonight, the point here is he can be. Your root issue is he presently isn't, but your hope is he can be. Even now, he has his arms open and he says tonight, the shepherd, Jesus Christ, I have done everything for you to enter into this psalm tonight. I've done it all. This psalm is all about what I've done, not what you need to do. He leads me. It's all about him. So stop trying to do things yourself. He's done everything. He's laid down his life. You just need to trust him. That's the call of this psalm. And I know someone who wrestled for years trying to be a Christian. She was born in a Christian home. And one day she was baptized. And I had to come up to her and ask her, what changed? We used to have to chat for ages with all her doubts and questions. She said, it was the minute I realized that I could do nothing. And it was all about what he did. And I simply trusted. That's what this psalm is calling you to do. So won't you even call upon him tonight and ask him to save you? He has this promise, and I will end on this. Even now tonight, Jesus says, whoever comes to me, whoever, it doesn't matter what you've done, whoever comes to me, I will never cast out. If you come into his hand tonight, he will never let you go. He promises that. Trust the shepherd.